Thank you, Hillary, and good evening, everybody, and especially good evening to Kathleen and Tom. I mentioned this earlier, Kathleen and Tom, just for the folks who are watching, I want to give just a brief introduction about the format we're going to be following, and then I'll give a short introductory, and then we'll go right into the questions. So the format tonight is you'll each have a minute and a half to answer the question. There will be no rebuttal. We'll alternate between questions that we talked about earlier. And at the close, you will each have 3 minutes to give a closing statement. Okay? So with that, let's get started. We all know there's no question that all of our lives have been turned upside down, and our nation is facing what we'd all describe, I think, as an unprecedented crisis as a result of the coronavirus pandemic. Our economy is in turmoil and facing what could be a very deep recession. Record numbers of unemployment claims have been filed, actually more than 26 million just in the last 4 weeks. And our healthcare delivery system, including hospitals, doctors, and nurses, are under extreme stress and in some cases near the breaking point. Clearly, Montana voters will be looking for leaders who have the vision and skills to help guide us through these troubling times. So our questions tonight will focus primarily on a number of critical issues related to these two topics, that is our healthcare system and our economy. So with that, we decided at the beginning that Kathleen, you would go first. And we're gonna start in the area of healthcare. So the first question is, by most accounts, not only did we fail to appreciate the gravity of the risk of the virus in a timely fashion, but also failed to adequately respond once we were aware of the problem. We didn't have enough test kits, ventilators, personal protective equipment, and other critical medical supplies and equipment. The scientific and medical experts are warning that we will probably experience a second wave of the COVID virus this fall and winter. How do you think we should prepare for this second wave?
Thanks, Mike. And first, let me thank you for moderating this. Thank you for your great service over so many years to the state. And thanks to the Gallatin Dems for putting this on. And I'm glad we're all wearing blue to symbolize the,
exactly.
The continued blue wave. So absolutely, we failed in anticipating the coronavirus outbreak. And healthcare is so critical. I mean, everyone deserves access to high quality, affordable healthcare. I have been advocating that for my public policy career and on both campaign trails last time and this time. So one of the mistakes in anticipating this was the disbanding of the pandemic office at the federal government. You know, people think this something like this can happen, and then it does. So that was a mistake. We needed to invest in testing straight off. I have been calling for increased testing for 6 weeks now. And I think we really missed an opportunity to get much farther ahead of this pandemic than we did. So we absolutely need to ensure that as we respond, so the anticipation, lack of anticipation was one thing, but in the response, we've got to have protective gear, and we've got to fix this patchwork of a healthcare system in the long run. So my time's up, and...
And if you have any more to say, because you spent about probably 25 or 30 seconds thanking all of us, so you can add a little more if you'd like.
Well, I have worked on healthcare issues in the Montana legislature in my 3 terms. Some of my legislation is saving lives now, expanded Medicaid, forced insurers to cover routine cancer care for patients. I am absolutely committed to solving healthcare and ensuring that everyone has access to quality, affordable healthcare. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathleen. Tom?
Mike, I can't recall on this format. Would you mind repeating just a short version of the question? I don't want to forget anything on this.
Well, I went through a litany of how unprepared we were to begin with. And then the question was, how do you, recognizing that our medical experts are telling us we're going to have a second wave in the fall and next winter, how do you think we should prepare for this second wave, knowing what we know now?
Well, and thank you for the question, Mike. Mike, it's good to meet you. We have not met before, except on this screen. Hello, Gallatin County and the rest of Montana and anyone else who happens to have wandered in on Facebook outside of Montana. It's a privilege to be here, even if it's just on Zoom and Facebook. I have to be honest. The only reason I'm here at all in public service or even have the privilege to be in front of you now is because of the broken healthcare system we have. And we have to acknowledge that, as you said, we were unprepared before. We were unprepared because we have a broken system. We have to acknowledge the fact that we currently means test access to life-saving care in this country. The wealthy can afford care, the poor cannot. And especially people in rural areas cannot afford it and don't have access. I'm talking about Montanans. We need to ground our responses in this to where the problems were in the beginning. Countries that, truthfully, I mean, we live in the strongest, best country on earth. I believe that in my bones. But South Korea, Taiwan, they are back to business as usual because their leaders have made a healthcare system that can respond to just this type of calamity. We need to remember that the values of healthcare for all, which I've been fighting for more than a year in my campaign, and acknowledging that healthcare is a right for all Americans, all Montanans, is how you avoid this from happening in the first place. Is there a better time than a pandemic to realize, as we are now, that the health of you and your family, of me and my family, is inextricably linked to the health care of my neighbors? If they do not get adequate care, they could receive COVID because they don't have adequate PPE working as nurses, and then they somehow give it to my family. We need to remember that the illness is the metaphor in this case for what's been broken. Moving forward as well, though, I mean, our campaign, you know, everything changed with the pandemic, as you know, and as everyone who's watching this knows. How do you campaign during a pandemic? One of the things we've done is we donated money and actively went and called people in China and purchased PPE for delivery to Montanans that didn't have it. I'm talking about like ER nurses who are going to work wearing diapers on their faces. The answer to the question has to be an acknowledgement of the dire straits we were in beforehand. Now, how do you fix this as the rounds go through and in the fall and later? The biggest one is that we have to have multiple rounds of stimulus. This is not just a healthcare calamity. It is now a general calamity that threatens our country. We have to have multiple rounds of stimulus. I believe in the European model of wage replacement, which you're seeing Republicans and Democrats come around for a stimulus 3, one that ensures that people don't have to go into the unemployment line, which even in a well-run state under Governor Bullock like Montana is still taking too long to get the things where they need to go. So I'm already dealing with constituents who are dealing with the inadequate response of our country before and after this virus hit us. So it's just, this is the question, I think, that focuses all of our narrow political views on the larger picture of the welfare of our fellow citizens.
Now, Tom, I need to remind you that it's a minute and a half answer, okay? In fairness to Kathleen, you can't go on for 5 minutes because that's a field sign from her, okay?
I got you. Please, go ahead.
I know you have a timer there because you told me you did. Okay, so here's our next question, and this is going to you this time, Tom.
Yes, sir.
So as soon as I'm done and I say, okay, Tom, you can set your timer, okay?
I got too excited about the pandemic stuff. This is a big
issue. I understand, but Kathleen gets excited too, but she stayed within her time. Anyway, let's move on here. The Affordable Care Act has provided vital health insurance coverage to some 20 million Americans, including 45,000 Montanans. The Republican mantra has always been, and still is during these difficult times, to repeal and replace, thereby eliminating the ACA protections for pre-existing conditions, lifetime coverage caps, and other critical benefits under the Act. What healthcare policies do you support that will provide access to affordable and quality healthcare for everyone in Montana and our nation now and into the future? Now, I know that's a lot to fit into a minute and a half, but I think you can do it.
The timer is set, and here we go. Look, like I said, our campaign from the beginning has called for healthcare for all. Healthcare is a human right for every American and every Montanan. We know this in our bones and in the moral fabric of this society and the community-minded communities we've built here. Now, having said that, tomorrow I can't just go and enact healthcare for all. We have to go through, this is why our campaign from the beginning has been in support of House Bill 1884, which is especially a part of Representative Underwood's bill, which would allow more Montanans to avail themselves of what's on the marketplace currently. More so than that as well, we have to increase the critical access hospital multiple reimbursement rates so that the places in Montana aren't about to lose their hospitals all the time. We have to ensure that we have actual practitioners here by ensuring that every county that is designated as a HPSA, which by the way, I believe is 54 of the counties in Montana, are able to attract world-class talented doctors, nurses, CNAs, LPNs, et cetera, in order to provide the care that we need. A minute and a half, like, you know, is going to be very short. I have 30 seconds. Here's the thing. I wouldn't be here for the broken healthcare system. I wouldn't have been successful in the state legislature, but for trying to address pre-existing conditions and scam insurance. And the thing that's going to be my absolute and the only thing that I will fight for most for Montanans and Americans is healthcare for all. To fix the system that we have, build on Obamacare, and truly bring healthcare as a right to every American.
Thank you, Tom. Kathleen?
Thanks, Mike. And again, everyone deserves access to affordable, quality healthcare. I have experience working in this arena, and it's a personal issue for me, having been a caregiver beginning at age 11 for 8 years with my mother with Alzheimer's. So I know what a healthcare crisis can do to a family. So my healthcare proposal involves allowing people 55 older and older to buy into Medicare. That will immediately lower the costs in the Medicare system and on the individual market. We need to make sure Congress fulfills its commitment to those on the individual market to help with premium payments. We need to lower the cost of prescription drugs by allowing Medicare to bargain for drug costs. We need to make sure that the Children's Health Insurance Program and the community health center funds are funded in the long run, not just used as political footballs. And we need to make sure that there's full opportunities for providers, including mental health providers, which is a high priority for me. And we need to make sure that the system operates on an outcome-based rather than a fee-for-service-based operation. And then Medicare and Medicaid. We need to make sure those programs are protected from cuts and stay solid. It's been an honor for me to work on healthcare issues, and we can't wait for big ideas. We need to make sure that we're getting things done as soon as possible. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, moving on, you'll be first to answer this question, Kathleen. The cost of prescription drugs is both worrisome and stressful for almost all Montanans. What are your policy solutions to address the high costs of prescription medications?
So thanks for that question. And again, healthcare is just so critical. As I travel around Montana, this healthcare and the cost of prescription drugs is one of the top issues. There's a story of a rancher along the front who was sacrificing food and utilities to be able to pay for insulin. And that is just unacceptable and immoral. So as I mentioned, we need to allow Medicare to bargain for drug prices. Medicaid and the VA can already do that. It's expected to save $11 billion. We need to make sure that the influence of pharma is limited and pulled back in Washington. That is the biggest lobbying element in Washington, and we need to get that under control. We need to make sure that generics are supported and advanced. We need to make sure that whenever the public invests in research for new drugs, including this vaccine for coronavirus, that the public gets benefit from that and that it isn't entirely privatized. There are other things that we can do, especially with that $11 billion in savings, to make sure that people have access. And it needs to be local access. There's also people that have to drive an hour to get to the pharmacy that sells the product at the prices that they need. So much needs to be done, and I'm ready to hit the ground running.
Thank you. Tom?
Sorry, I was on mute, guys. I got involved in public service because I have close family members who rely on expensive medications and expensive treatments that they won't be able to afford with our broken system. That's why I'm here. We have to remind ourselves the fundamental indecency of the idea there are people possibly on this call, that there are definitely people down the street who ration insulin because they happen to be in Montana and not in Alberta or British Columbia. Only hours away is a system that allows us to afford healthcare, afford life-saving medication. Americans die and Canadians don't because we have decided to make it this way. Our policies and the way this works is a choice we have made. There is no nibbling around the edges for a family that is going without food or utility payments, as Kathleen said, because of the idea that they must pay for healthcare or they must pay for drugs. Now, one of the things we can do immediately is allow importation from Canada or any other country in which generics are allowed, because America effectively, and Americans through their expensive use of drugs, they essentially fundraise for drug companies to allow them to charge less for other people across the world. And importantly also, we have to get dark money out of politics. We have to get money out of politics, because who is the largest group that puts money into politics right now? What is the largest K Street firms? It is pharma. The reason that big pharma is able to have a stranglehold on our politics is because they pay for it and they get money, they get out what they put in. They make a return on their investments. And that investment is in our lives, and we fail in that.
Thank you, Tom. Okay. This will be the last question I'm going to ask under the healthcare mantra, if you will. And we'll start with you, Tom. What weaknesses in our healthcare system do you think have been exposed by this pandemic crisis? And I know we've talked about some. And what solutions would you propose for solving these weaknesses?
The system itself is broken. There is no one weakness. I mean, we have nurses in Montana arriving to work at emergency rooms wearing diapers on their faces. We have Indian Health Service, until Medicaid expansion was passed and then reauthorized, they were operating under life or limb procedure. That meant that Montanans were going to their healthcare provider and were turned away unless they were about to die or lose an arm. There is no small thing that is broken that needs to be fixed. The entire thing is broken. The answer here is that also Montanans know this. Exit polling showed that 65% of Montanans said they wanted major change to healthcare last time. I aim to bring it to them. And that's what I aim to do because it's what they want and what they deserve. Truthfully, like I said before, healthcare is a right, but is there a better reminder that the healthcare of ourselves and our families and our neighbors is dependent on the healthcare of people across the state and across the country than this pandemic? There is not one. The answer is to acknowledge that healthcare for all is the goal and get there as quickly as possible. And that is what I'll do. And that's something that you can say that, truthfully, it is actually an issue. As I said, 65% of Montanans support this. This is something that is bipartisan, this acknowledgement of the moral right of everyone to have healthcare. It's an idea that's built into the communities that we've built here. And that's what I'll do.
Thank you. Kathleen?
So there's definitely more than a minute and a half on how we can talk about the weaknesses in the healthcare system that have been evidenced by the pandemic. Number one, you know, real lack of coordination at the federal level. I think we could have worked through this a lot more efficiently and effectively if we had better leadership at the federal level. But as far as the system as a whole, I think one of the things that's really showing up, both healthcare and beyond, is the increasing wealth gap in America, that the people that are most affected by this pandemic are the ones that can least afford it. And so people being laid off from their jobs, if they had healthcare from their jobs, those are the ones that are losing it. The people that are least likely to be able to afford to buy a new plan on their on the ACA, those are the ones that are going to be paying the highest cost. So, but I also want to spend a little time on this question, since it's the last healthcare one, reminding folks What's at stake in this election? If assuming Matt Rosendale is the Republican nominee, we have someone who has advocated for not protecting pre-existing conditions, who rubber stamped a 23% increase in healthcare insurance premiums without the blink of an eye, who has just been all about repeal without any replace. And that's what we're up against. And we've got to make sure that doesn't happen. Thanks.
Okay. So I told you that was going to be our last question, and I'm going to veer off from all of my questions because I think there's one that we need to talk about, okay? And Kathleen, you can start on this one. And I think this pandemic and our response to it, and actually in the way the money is being distributed by the federal government to the states and hospitals and all that, is exposing the weaknesses that, it's exposing rural hospitals to almost near bankruptcy in some cases. How would you, what efforts would you undertake when you were in Congress to shore up and protect our rural health hospitals and doctors?
And that goes to me?
Yes.
Okay. So absolutely. So I have a absolute longstanding commitment to rural Montana. I've worked with farmers and ranchers for a lot of my career and just am committed to representing all of Montana and really trying to work to bring some vibrancy back to rural Montana and our rural communities. You have to have a clinic. You have to have healthcare. You have to have a school. You have to have a community to be able to have a town. So for rural hospitals specifically, part of the stimulus or the relief package that needed to be fixed, and I'm frankly not sure if it has been, was that some of the hospital money couldn't go to any publicly owned or managed hospitals. And I think we have 10 of them in Montana that are either municipally or otherwise publicly run. And so that was a real problem with the federal legislation. But as I mentioned as well in my overall with healthcare, is that the community health center funds that keep getting used as a political football in funding discussions in Washington, those have got to be funded in the long run. How can you run a clinic if you don't know if your budget is going to be fully funded, for the next 6 months? So there's all kinds of things, Medicaid, IHS, all kinds of things we need to work on to ensure that rural healthcare is available.
Thank you. Tom?
I believe the question was about rural healthcare and the pandemic, right, Mike? So I and stop me if I'm straying here, because this is a big, huge topic for Montana specifically. Critical access hospitals, as Kathleen was saying, are the linchpin of many, many communities in the state. It's not just about healthcare. It's about community identity. It's about the ongoing viability of rural towns and really the rural practice and culture of Montana that makes this place so special. Being the sole member of Congress from this state out of 435 people means that you don't have much power. I'm very aware of that. But what you do have is the bully pulpit of being the only, well, keep in mind, Democrats also, there's not one Democrat that represents an at-large district like Montana. So within the Democratic Party and also within the national conversation, you can use the bully pulpit of the Montana congressional seat in order to argue for rural people everywhere. And that's not just during the pandemic. Now, specifically when you're talking about, I think, the kind of rickety system we have for rural healthcare, recall there is no level one trauma center in Montana. We all act like it's normal that if one of us gets in a car accident, it's very possible we're also taking a jet plane ride to Seattle. That's unacceptable. If we were actually equitably distributing healthcare resources across the country, we would have one. More so than that, though, too, recall that on the eight federally recognized tribes in the state, IHS is still underfunded due to regardless of the treaty obligations. We are not only shortchanging rural people, we're also shortchanging rural Native American and Montanans. The inequities that are built into our system when it comes to rural healthcare are only exacerbated by the pandemic. And you could fix that by adding a frontier designation rather than just critical access. You need to fully fund IHS. And again, you need to increase the amount of providers through increasing the multiples for their reimbursements for their healthcare education. There are many things we can do here.
All right. Thank you, Tom. I know that we could probably do this whole hour on nothing but healthcare, but
yes.
We're now going to move on to something else. And Tom, the first question, this is going to be under the heading of the economy now, okay? First question is, more than 26 million workers filed for unemployment benefits in the last 4 weeks, and that number is probably low given the difficulty some unemployed workers are having filing their claims. I would venture to guess that our unemployment rate is now approaching close to 20%. Although some government financial relief has been provided, many, if not all, of these people are worried about going back to work. What would you say to one of these unemployed workers if they ask you, what you could do to help them survive and get back to work?
Mike, that's a really tough question, truthfully. But I have to say, I'm already seeing this as a state legislator. Recall that Montana's legislature, we're volunteer mostly, but we're every 2 years, right? So most of our job only happens when we're in session. And truthfully, there was not much to do, even though I believe I wanted to serve before this. But during the pandemic, I've found essentially a new role in my community, which has been so satisfying and so gratifying to have public service be a part of it again. It's part of my currently elected role rather than the campaign. And that's, I've been fielding calls and questions from worried constituents who are waiting in line at the unemployment office. And by waiting in line, I mean they're doing the same thing we're doing. They're sitting at home on their computer screen, wondering if they're going to be able to help their mortgage. I spoke with a woman who'd started a business. She had 6 employees. They were her best friends. They were family. She was going to have to fire them and then lose her own job because her small business was gone. The specific aspect about Montana is that we have the highest entrepreneurial rate in the country. What that really means is that there aren't many, many large corporations. We work for ourselves and for one another. And so what I would say to someone who is looking for some sort of support through this is that there is, with better government and more working family-focused policy, there is an answer. And that is partly in ensuring that workers are treated well in our political system from the beginning. And also that we need to have multiple rounds of stimulus. This is going to be more difficult before it gets easier. And you have to level with voters of all political stripes, which I always do, Republican, Democrat, Independent. It's how I won my district that voted for President Trump plus 11 points. It's how we bring people into the fold as Democrats again, to remind them that they, working people, are the focus of our politics in the first place.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Kathleen?
So the strength of Montana is so amazing as we work through a crisis like this. As I check in with Montanans by phone and otherwise, they're hurting, right? They're trying to work at home while homeschooling their kids. They're waiting for the unemployment check. What I've tried to do, which is what was so valuable to me when I was a state legislator, is to be a resource. We've put as much COVID-19 response information on our Facebook page as we can. We continue to update it so that that we can inform people, again, for your question of how to survive and get back to work. So we need to ensure that people know about the unemployment opportunities. We need to ensure that the Paycheck Protection Program is actually going truly to the businesses that need it, the small businesses in Montana that are the backbone of our economy. And we need to continue to provide those resources. And then we need to reopen our economy in a careful, health-based, science-based way and get people back to work, which may be a different kind of appearance. Restaurants may have tables much farther apart. Maybe we're wearing masks. We need to just figure this out together and move forward. And until then, I'm reassuring folks and trying to be as much of a resource as I can.
Thank you, Kathleen. Okay, Kathleen, this next question will go to you. When we come out of this crisis, Are there any areas of the economy that you would focus on stimulating in order to generate new good paying jobs, both in Montana and at the national level?
Well, I was an economist in a former life, and what I learned in doing that kind of work was that there are certain sectors that that provide a lot more multiplier effects and employment effects than others. Some of those are construction. So we have talked about the fact that infrastructure is deteriorating in Montana. With less people driving and less people buying gas, the gas taxes are taking a hit. We need to make sure that not only the existing infrastructure projects have a way of being funded and going forward when there's that kind of hit to some of that funding. And I think we've got to get our tourism industry back up and running. That may be challenging. But I think infrastructure and that kind of work is if I had to pick one, that would be an area that I would really suggest we work on.
Thank you, Kathleen. Tom?
Mike, thank you for this question. So the thing is, areas of our economy that we could start to stimulate before others, this is a once in a lifetime event. Infrastructure spending on a new highway regrading is not going to solve the problem for working families across the state. They were already living lives of economic precarity. Missoula, Bozeman, those two towns right now, those are the two up in the top 10 of the most unaffordable cities relative to wages in the country. We were already dealing with a broken economy that only served corporations and wealthy people on the coasts and people in the Yellowstone Club and Big Sky. We can see that because we all work for them. The economy has already bifurcated. I'm speaking to people in Gallatin County, I guess, though I'm not there. You know what I'm talking about. We live in a time where there are either the served or the server. That is unacceptable. And part of the reason that we're dealing with this pandemic as a nation and the government and the economy are responding so poorly for working families is because none of it was about them to begin with. And I do respect Kathleen's immediate response for infrastructure spending, yes, what we need to do there. But we also need to acknowledge that 40 years of wage stagnation for Americans, we were already on the path to financial ruin for people of my generation. We need to reinvigorate Montana and the Democratic Party's nationalists, compact with unions. That's why we were the first campaign to unionize. That's why we unionized the state party as well, because we need to ensure that the working people of this state, Democrat and Republican, that they come to us, that they know that we fight for them. So I do agree that we need to work on infrastructure spending, shovel-ready projects. We need to obviously increase our healthcare because there's not enough facilities at all. But asking for tourism to come back is not going to put food on the table for people in Flathead County tomorrow. It's reimagining the politics so that it doesn't break under the slightest stress as it already has.
Thank you, Tom. Okay, Tom. This next question, you'll start on this, and this, I think, is a question that's probably is a good one for both you and Kathleen.
Please.
In Montana and nationally, our farm and ranch community is getting hit from a number of directions. Climate changes, tariffs, soft commodity prices, and now this pandemic, which is disrupting the workforce, the transportation system, and our food delivery system. Dairymen are dumping milk. Farmers are plowing under crops. Ranchers can't get their cattle to market. What policy initiatives do you support to help our farm and ranch community stay afloat and become more stabilized for the future?
I'm glad you included the future as well, because this goes back to the previous answer. We've been the only campaign in this race, Democrat or Republican, that's had policy out for a year. Now, that policy has changed based on speaking with people and ensuring that we take the full breadth of the measure of Montanans' different ways that they understand policy and how we can tweak it so that it serves them. One of the things we have always heard is that we need stable trade agreements for commodity farmers, for cattle ranchers. You know, the economy, the farm and ag economy in Montana is largely based also on international trade. you can take this question any way you want, but one way we can go is watching the way that Donald Trump has abandoned rural America, specifically rural Montana. The renegotiation of NAFTA into whatever it became afterwards, it did very little for us for all the pain it caused. We must have certainty in our international trade agreements. And partly that means Congress finally going against the imperial presidency and working as a body to set cogent, thoughtful trade policy that centers American interests first, of course, but that also lasts for years so that the people who have built, for instance, the wheat farmer who's built for the last 20 years trying to get markets in China doesn't see that upended on a whim because yesterday the president decided his poll numbers weren't looking good and President Xi needed to be taught a lesson. We have our entire economy in this case in the hands of a single man or woman for that matter. It doesn't matter who's the president. We have to have stronger leadership from the Congress and from the government as a whole to ensure that rural America can weather every storm because there's going to be another pandemic. There's going to be climate change. There's going to be another bad winter. We need to remember that.
Thank you, Tom. Kathleen?
So I love rural Montana, and that love goes deep. And I have so enjoyed working with farmers and ranchers through my career, helping with their water rights, helping them diversify their economy, their incomes, et cetera. When the tariffs were first proposed, my first question was, why does the president have authority over tariffs? That's economic policy. That's Congress's role. But sure enough, over the last 4 decades or so, Congress has abdicated its authority over tariffs. And we need to strengthen Congress, claw that back, and make sure that Congress does its job. Other aspects for rural Montana, we need to figure out how to bring young people back to the land. Some of that is land tenure issues. We need to foster agricultural research so that we can advance new ways to raise food. I've been a very strong local food advocate, and we need to build those systems and do more value-added opportunities with Montana agricultural products. We need to ensure the Farm Bill works for Montana. And we need to address the nefarious consolidation of farming enterprises that has been going on for a long time, protect water rights, and foster access to healthcare. I created a bill that, or passed a bill that created over 200 new businesses and over 3,000 new Montana products in just 3 years. A lot of those in rural Montana, and I will keep with that kind of work. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay. Kathleen, we're going to start with you on this one. And I can tell you, this is my last question under the economy. And so it's going to give you a lot of leeway. So I'm going to give you guys 2 minutes to answer this question. Okay. And it's similar to the question related to healthcare about system weaknesses. What other weaknesses in our state and national economy do you think have been exposed by this pandemic crisis? And what solutions would you propose for solving these weaknesses? Again, you'll each have 2 minutes to answer this.
And I'm sorry, who's first?
You are, Kathleen.
Okay. As I mentioned in one of the earlier questions, the Federal Reserve has a statistic that's just so scary that 40% of Americans couldn't, and it's probably worse at this point, couldn't accommodate a surprise expense of $400. So the people with any kind of safety net or cushion economically in this nation is so low. And the widening of the wealth gap in Montana and America has only been aggravated through this. The people that are making it through, some of the businesses that are getting the stimulus and the relief are those that have a higher likelihood of being able to weather this storm. So I was proud in the Montana legislature as vice chair of the taxation committee to always be looking for ways to level the playing field and advance equity and equitability. We laid the groundwork for an earned income tax credit, which is one of the most progressive tax tools that is available. And now Montana has one, which is great. But we need to make sure that the 1% are paying their fair share and that we're working to lift everyone up from the bottom and ensure they all can craft and pursue their American dream. I have worked on those types of opportunities as we pulled out of the recession, created new types of corporations in Montana that allow entrepreneurs to do well while doing good, fought for our to attract the film industry. I know how to help get an economy out of a crisis, and I'm going to take that skill to Washington and do it all over again.
Thank you. Tom?
Sorry, I'm muted. This question is a big one. I'd like to just take it larger. Look, I ran previously and won and represent currently a district that voted for President Trump plus 11 points. It was held by a Republican. It's one of the few flips in the state. Here's the deal. Montanans know the raw deal that they've gotten. Americans know it too. That's why they're doing crazy things like voting game show hosts into the office of the presidency, because the system has failed them. My generation, possibly my older brother's generation, my parents' generation, right now is the time that the American dream is starting to fall apart. We're seeing that people don't have faith that the next generation of people will have as good a lives as they did. That is the fundamental disjunct of the way of our politics talks about the economy and talks about the way we can fix it, and then the way that the pandemic actually makes it true. Hopefully, policymakers, everyone in this room, people in Gallatin County already know this, but everyone else, the economy is broken. And the way that we can fix that is by ensuring that we have a worker-focused economy and politics. We cannot continue to lose the congressional seat on the old politics of platitudes. You have to unionize your campaign. You have to live your values and the values of Democrats everywhere. That is by centering everything on working families, centering a politics on working families that can bring people back to the Democratic Party who we've lost. This question is about economics. This question is about the pandemic. But more so than that, none of this matters if we lose. None of this matters if, even if we lose, we don't change the trajectory of the party and our politics and our conversation, so that we can win in the end to serve the people better than others who would want to do them harm. That is what this campaign's been doing from the beginning. And that's what I did in the legislature. Again, when I brought people from, I talked about progressive economic policy. I tried to, one of my biggest and most bills I was most proud about, by the way, and I will lose some people as well on this, was to decrease the cost, decrease property taxes on middle-class families and increase them on wealthy out-of-state second homeowners. I was called a communist for doing that. That's not communism. What that is actually working for Montanans and working for working people. It's that idea that what we have is broken, that you need to come to this to understand the scale of what we need to fix. The pandemic, it was true before, but it's true now more than ever as well.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to shift away from the economy now. And Tom, we'll go to you on this one.
Yes, sir.
This one has to do with elections. There's much debate in Congress these days about ensuring free and fair elections this fall. And we saw what happened in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. What efforts do you think Congress should be taking to protect the integrity of our election process now and into the future?
So thank you for asking this question. This was a specific thing that I was concerned about serving in the legislature. I know that many people are losing faith in our system. And I know that there are nefarious actors such as Russia who are actually trying to do that on purpose. I wrote and passed a bill in the Republican-dominated legislature in order to ensure our elections in Montana would remain free and fair. It allows the National Guard to essentially stress test our election systems, right? So that was something that I've already done. It's proven to be able to work. This is a should be a bipartisan issue to allow to assure that one person and one vote. But we are facing unprecedented headwinds with the pandemic. And we know this. Governor Bullock is an exceptional leader. And the only thing, the only option he has right now, specifically within the state of Montana, is to take our primary election to go to mail-in. But we also know that, for instance, on the Blackfeet Reservation, they don't have home mail. Many Montanans in this upcoming election and in future elections as well will be disenfranchised because of specific histories of racism based against their community. We need to remind ourselves of that, of how far we have to go. Yes, we have come far, but we have more to do. And I'm about to run out of time here. The question of elections is fundamental to everything. Of course, we have to continue and ensure that House Bill 1 then passes the Senate. But more so than that, we also have to fundamentally recognize that the Voting Rights Act needs to be applied again to the southern states. We cannot trust some government officials with our vote. And beyond that, we have to get money out of politics. That's why, you know, in Citizens United must be ended. That's why, you know, money does not actually equate with your voice in the Constitution. That is a misapplication of the constitutional mandate. And I have to end here, but it's just, I have to tell you, this is one of the signal issues of our time. Nothing that Kathleen and I are talking about can be accomplished without free and fair elections. And people need to know the severity of where we are right now and what can be done to fix it.
Thanks, Tom. Kathleen?
Well, so at the federal level, elections are how we advance democracy, right? We all have the right and opportunity to vote. So one thing they can do at the federal level is stop complaining about mail voting and get out of our way and allow Montana to do our mail ballot and also make sure the Postal Service stays in business. If we're going to do all mail elections, we need the mail to work. I'm not sure if the federal government is involved with this, but we definitely need satellite offices, and this assumes on the reservations and on difficult to reach areas. That assumes that, you know, we'll be able to safely vote in person, but that has got to happen. The federal government needs to really work on the fact that foreign governments are meddling with our elections. We should take that seriously, and they should do something about it. And then something nationally that really isn't as much of an issue here is ensuring that redistricting is done by independent commissions. And that's part of H.R. 1. And that needs to be much more of a national approach. And I will say that I am so honored to be endorsed by End Citizens United in this election, the anti-dark money group that is really advancing a lot of this work. So that's an honor.
Thank you. Well, it's time for me now to say we have 10 minutes left here. Can you believe how much fun we've been having? it's been critical, and I hope we have tons of people that are listening to this, because both of you have been very good. So our last question, and we'll start with you, Kathleen, has to do with public lands. The Department of Interior has devolved into a slow motion disaster under Trump. David Bernhardt, the Secretary of Interior, is a former oil and gas lobbyist, and William Perry Pindley, the director of the BLM, has a long history of advocating for selling off our public lands. Public lands and access thereto is sacred to Montanans. What will you do as a member of Congress to protect and defend our public lands and its access?
Well, this has been my career for almost four decades. And I've been a champion for not only public lands, but clean air and water, and ensuring that we're protecting our outdoor heritage. So we absolutely need to return responsible management and leadership on public lands to Congress. I fought in the legislature to turn back every single proposal to transfer public lands or to evaluate the management or whatever it is. We are seeing dangerous industrialization of our public lands, and just the BLM reworking of their Central Montana management plan to allow 95% of that area to be open to oil and gas leasing is just a perfect example of how this has gotten entirely out of control. So I will continue to be a champion for public lands. I'll remind folks that our likely opponent in this race, Matt Rosendale, One of his top priorities was to advance the transfer of public lands when he was running for this office before. So we need to remember that we need to send a champion, a proven champion with a almost four decade commitment to public lands and solving difficult natural resource issues, and send that that person to Congress. And I would be so honored to do that work.
Thank you, Kathleen. Tom?
Now, Mike, this is the last question we have here before
it
we-
It is, before paper. Closing statements.
I'm going to cheat, and I'm going to talk more about other things, too. Here we go, minute 30. Look, public lands. Montanans know that they are what make our state. But we also know, Steve Daines, Greg Gianforte, they demagogue on these issues. They lie to us. They say they're going to fund the LWCF. They don't. They shortchange it, $900 million. This is a partisan issue, access to our public lands. Sadly, at least in D.C., it's a partisan issue. In Montana, it's not. I have a proven record of bringing over Trump voters, Republicans, moderates, Democrats, independents, doesn't matter who you are, Montanans. They know that I'm going to fight for access to the trails. They know I'm going to fight for access to the hunting lands that we hold dear. And also, and I think, and Mike, I have to bring it up, I know it is related, climate change. What is the point of fighting for, of talking about public lands and not addressing the fact that those public lands are bound to either burn up, dry out, get soggy, or lose their herds because we are doing nothing to address the climate crisis? It is the signal issue of our time. You cannot simply ask this question and then not talk about the fact that these lands will be deeply degraded by our inaction. We are the only campaign in this race not accepting fossil fuel money. We are the only campaign in this race speaking to the climate crisis as the actual crisis it is. We need to remind ourselves what we're going to lose when we act like public lands are divorced from the idea of protecting our climate. We'll lose them anyway, and we'll lose our livelihoods. This is all related, I think we've seen. Many of these questions were about the pandemic, about public lands, about healthcare. What we're seeing is that actually the answer is always the same. Montanans demand change, because they know it can be better. So of course I support public lands in all the ways Kathleen does. I'm a dedicated public lands, not only user, hunter, fisherman, but also someone who's fought for public lands in my lifetime. But more so than that, I understand that they matter more than just the idea of fighting for them specifically.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Well, we're now at that point where you each get to give a closing statement. Before that though, I'd like to, on my own behalf, thank both of you for appearing here tonight. There's a number of, I had lots of other issues that we could have covered that are important. We just ran out of time, and I apologize for that. But I appreciate your attention and the care that you gave to the answers that you provided to the folks who are watching. So thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
So with that, now you each have 3 minutes to give a closing statement, and Tom, you get to go first, and Kathleen, you will finish.
So first off, thank you, Mike. Thank you, Ms. Williams. Thank you, Gallatin County Dems, and thank you, Montanans everywhere. It's, even though this is just happening in my kitchen, most of this campaign at this point, it has been a privilege to be a public servant, and it's been a privilege to serve the state of Montana through this campaign as well. But the thing that we've done from the beginning in this campaign is that we have led. First off, I won a Trump district. We all talk about this great white whale, the Trump voter. I have spoken to them. They are my neighbors. I have brought them to the side of Democrats. I have opened the doors of the party again to a district that had voted for President Trump plus 11 points. I didn't have to lie and say, like, you know, I didn't have to say that I wasn't a Democrat. I didn't have to say I didn't have progressive values. When asked questions about whether or not the president should be impeached, I was the only person on the Zoom call who said the truth, which is that he lied to us. He used our public dollars to enforce, to try and work against our elections with a foreign official. And he needs to be impeached. I stood with Senator Tester and led the state because they know what Democrats think. And they know that we shouldn't be lying to them. And that is how I won that district in the first place, by respecting the voter, by being truthful to the voter, and by understanding that the only way we're going to bring people back and start to win elections again as Democrats in Montana is by understanding that the voters are smart people as well. And they care about their communities. And that's why when I got to the state legislature, I passed 24 bills. Or sorry, I wrote 24 bills. Passing would have been a different thing. they move the ball forward on reducing the tax inequality, making sure that people who worked really hard but didn't have much money didn't have to pay more taxes than people who are billionaires who only summer here and spend most of their time in California. We unionized our campaign because we believe in living our values, because we know that voters are going to look at not only the things we say, but what we do. And what we do is lead. We were instrumental in unionizing the Democratic Party because we care about working people as well. When it comes to the climate crisis, our campaign also leads. We don't take fossil fuel money. We acknowledge that it is the crisis of our time. There is a tomorrow after the pandemic. There is not a tomorrow after the climate crisis. More than that, during this time, we put money of our own campaign into negotiating with Chinese manufacturer of KN95 masks and delivering them to communities that needed it. I delivered masks to a woman who walked up to the door in an ER and she was wearing a diaper on her face. I went to the Crow Reservation and found they didn't have PPE at all. We have a broken healthcare system. It is ridiculous that we have to step into the role abdicated by the federal government, and yet our campaign continues to lead. Right now I'm organizing a tenants union for my constituents so that they can push back against a landlord who's trying to take advantage of them. Both of my opponents on both sides of the aisle in this race could do this tomorrow. They could protect their workers. They could be forthright about impeachment. They could call for rent relief. They could treat the climate crisis like the crisis that it is, but they choose not to. They do not lead. Montanans cannot afford another 2 years of Republicans running our country into the ground. They need a Democratic Party that can bring them to the fold and that can lead again. This campaign, with your help across the state, is fighting and it's leading and it's understanding the severity of the moment and working for working Montanans. It has been a privilege and an honor to do this in the first place. I truthfully, sometimes I think I'm just some guy, but actually I'm trying to lead the state forward. So I hope you'll join us on this journey, and I hope we can earn your vote through our sincere, earnest belief that things can be better and that Montanans deserve it to be better, of all political stripes.
Thank you, Tom. Kathleen?
Thanks, Mike. Thanks to our hosts. It's great to be participating in a debate hosted by my hometown committee, so thank you. I'm running for Congress to finish what I started, with your help, last election, to make sure Montana has a proven, true representative in the U.S. House. I moved to Montana 26 years ago. It's the first place that ever felt like home for me, and I've worked to serve this great state in as many ways as possible ever since. In traveling our wonderful state, I've had the chance to speak with Montanans of all political stripes about their hopes, their struggles, their dreams. We also got to do the Miles City Pie Auction and a barbecue in Plains in the span of 36 hours. That's a marathon. By showing up and putting 75,000 miles on my car, you get to truly hear the voices of Montana. I think about the rancher sacrificing food and utilities to pay for insulin, the Crow entrepreneur who wants to start a bank to help build native businesses, the small business that was looking to perfect battery storage, but after being overlooked for investments from inside the US, had to sell the company to a Chinese firm. These and all Montanans deserve a real leader who will fight for them. In crisscrossing the state, it is reaffirmed for me that we must have a leader who shows up and delivers. And in uncertain times like these, it's even more important that we send someone to Congress with a proven record of getting things done for Montana. I did that as a state legislator for 3 terms representing Gallatin County as we worked through the impacts of the Great Recession. I'm proud to have passed legislation that created over 200 new small businesses in Montana and gave Montanans the chance to pursue their American dream. I'm proud to have voted to expand Medicaid and protected care for cancer patients, work that is saving lives every day. And I'm proud to have fought over my 37-year career to defend our public lands, keep water in our streams, and keep our planet healthy so Montana can remain the last best place. The likely Republican nominee has a different vision for our state and our country. He can't seem to find a political office he doesn't want to run for and doesn't seem to have held a stance that he couldn't later misrepresent. He advocated transferring our public lands. And as auditor, he stood idly by as people's health care costs soared. And then he pitched them on junk insurance just as an epidemic took hold. He's even done favors for campaign donors in his auditor's office. It's time for a different type of representation in the House, one that doesn't take money from corporate PACs, one that stands for Montanans, not for a politician's personal profit. We need someone in Washington who has delivered results and charts her own course so that we can get real results on lowering healthcare costs, boosting Montana's economy, and protecting our outdoor heritage. My commitment to you is what I've always done, put Montanans first. I'm ready to be a true representative for you in Washington, not the special interests, and I ask for your vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen, and thank you to both of you. That concludes our fireside chat.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, guys.